Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to the weekly Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brand, joined with my regular co-host, the excellent James Rhodes, on this Monday, March the 4th, the day after Manchester City. Not the result we wanted, but more or less the result we expected, performance. And lots of other talking points to discuss about that. First of all, how was your weekend, mate?
Yeah, it was not bad otherwise. Obviously, like you said, it's a bit to be expected. So it was kind of like you feel almost like shockingly good for a minute in the beginning when you get that goal early. And then I think by halftime, even though we were still leading 1-0, I think I'd already settled into kind of tacit acceptance of what was about to come in the second half. And I wasn't very surprised when it did. But it's gotten to the point where it doesn't ruin my weekend anymore, which is a good thing personally and a bad thing as a fan of this formerly great Manchester club.
Well, like you said, there was never a moment where I thought United were going to win that game. Even when they went 1-0 up, even at halftime, I was still expecting United to lose the game. I knew they couldn't play the way they were playing for the rest of that game and not concede. And you always had the feeling that once they conceded one, the rest would come. Lots have been made about, of course, the 26% possession. Other stats which don't look good. In Ten Hag's slight defence, you saw the lineup at the start of the game. And to me, that was as much an indictment on the whole football club and everything that's gone before it, that a football club this size is in this situation. I'm trying to think of other top clubs that United would consider their peers. Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, the top clubs around the world, have they ever been in a situation where they have no fit striker? Which isn't an accident, by the way, because Anthony Martial being injured is as predictable as the sun coming up tomorrow. One fit fullback going into a game like this with a team like that, not only is it not comprised of what would be in its starting team, it's comprised of players that wouldn't even be in those positions. And you look, I mean, the front line itself. You know, what was it? Was it McTominay as the forward? Was it,
Bruno, I think, but it was a little hard to tell at times.
And that's the thing is like, Bruno Fernandes is not a striker. Scott McTominay is not a striker. I mean, if Bernardo Silva was played down the middle, you know, would you expect Bernardo Silva to be a rival for Erling Haaland? I mean, we knew that Rasmus Højlund had injury issues. It's not realistic to expect him to play every single week. I mean, it is just, it defies belief. And Ten Hag, I think, will pay for his job with this, and we'll get into that later. And some of it may be deserved, some of it won't be deserved. But that, to me, was as much, that lineup to me spoke about, to me, as much about what has happened in the last 10 years of putting it in that position as much as anything else.
Yeah, and I agree. And you know, I don't like to compare it to City because you tweeted some stuff about this too that I agree with. I've said to people, I don't really give a damn what City do. I don't really care when they win. I don't really care what they win. I don't really consider them United's peers in a certain way. It's not to diminish the individuals because they have some incredible individuals at that club that have done amazing things. It's not to diminish, you know, the Kevin De Bruyne is one of the best players of all time in the Premier League, or what they're doing as a team, but more as a club. I don't really care what they do due to so many reasons. There are very few clubs, you know, there's a few clubs in England that have done things the right way. Unfortunately for us, and as much as people don't want to hear it, you know, essentially being Liverpool and Arsenal at this point in time, they are the clubs that have done things the right way. And it's them I make the comparison to when you talk about the lineup, when you talk about the team. Mm-hmm. They are the ones you compare to, not Man City, and say, wow, we are so far behind what they have done and what they're doing right now and where they're at this point in time that it's depressing. It's the lineup, but it's also the team. I got a lot of angry messages for tweeting something about Liverpool's last minute winner. But I don't really care about that. I honestly say if you can't enjoy as a football fan what is quite an interesting title race this year, one of the best ones in the last 10 years.
I can't say I do, but I'll let you do.
But I'm not saying that you have to, but I am saying that I don't feel like turning the TV off and crying every day, which is what I do if I would ignore some of the things that are being done by the other teams in the Premier League as a football fan. But the fact of it remains that they're doing things that you wish United were doing and that you wish United could be at that level at this point in time, which is a sad indictment of the way that things have gone for the last years and years and years. You know, it should be 100% United in a title race, winning those late games that matter, not winning late games to climb from eighth to seventh, you know, not getting a Scott McTominay goal that keeps us out of the fucking bottom half of the table. That is where we are at in terms of what happens now compared to these clubs. And that is unfortunate at this point in time that's where we are. But yeah, I mean, the City game, to be expected. There's probably no other outcome. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got some good results at City. I don't know that it was comparably much worse of a team, but it doesn't particularly matter. Ten Hag also beat them as well last year. Just to be expected, especially this season, how things have gone.
Here's the thing. I look at that lineup and I say to myself, because I believe that last week's defeat against Fulham was far more defining than for Ten Hag.
100%.
And I wonder how many managers could have taken that lineup and went to City, played differently, played better, Jason Bird wrote something that actually really irritated me, but you know, to go on and play like a League One team now. I mean, if there's one thing a City fan would know about is what a League One team would look like, to be fair. But you know, just mere months ago, we were being told that it would be the end of football if, you know, the Qataris bought United and that success wouldn't matter under the Qataris because of the way it was funded and nothing would matter. No trophy. No. And for some reason, it doesn't apply to Manchester City as if this is some type of sporting excellence accomplishment. I made the point that if Abu Dhabi had bought Leighton Orient or Macclesfield, it would have been exactly the same situation. This has got nothing to do with Manchester City. This is Abu Dhabi FC. There's nothing about this that's the result of excellence from Manchester City. We have a before and after of Abu Dhabi and Manchester City of what they were like before Abu Dhabi and what they were like now. I mean, but for some reason, this context is lost. Jason Bird also wrote an article not so long ago about how United shouldn't be allowed to profit if they sell Mason Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's fine, but Manchester City owners, you know, war criminals, human rights abusers, right? For some reason,
I don't know.
It's not applied to Manchester City. And by the way, their previous owner, Thaksin Shinawatra, right? I'll encourage you to do a Google search there and let me know what you think. And I'm going, you know, this puritanical standard that United are held to an expectation of how they must win is never applied to Manchester City.
Or Newcastle at this point.
And here's the thing, James. I understand that a lot of these journalists, their hatred of United, which clearly, you know, not all of them do, but some do. That's a fact. The satisfaction and joy of watching United lose clouds their ability to judge the teams that beat them.
Yeah.
And to me, if Liverpool beat United, laud them. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Because as much as it kills me to say it, that's sport and merit.
Mm-hmm.
You've accomplished that. And you can acknowledge that without enjoying it. I don't enjoy it. I scored against Luton and everything made me sick. Right? I don't like watching Liverpool accomplish anything. It betrays my instincts. I don't like watching them celebrate. I don't like watching them score. I just don't. Doesn't matter. Never been a single occasion where I've enjoyed that. But I can acknowledge it. I can sit there and look at Liverpool and go, every single thing they've done has not been beyond the reach of Manchester United financially or otherwise. There's no reason why United shouldn't be in that situation. And the reason why they're in the situation, even if City didn't exist, United's incompetence would. The way the football club was run would. United would be still in exactly the same position if City didn't exist. But they may have two other titles. They finished second twice. That's worth acknowledging. But I look at some of the reaction about the brilliance of Manchester City, and I'm going, you know, this is the equivalent of lauding the cheater. And this is not sour grapes, right? This is, you know, I'm sure if you're City fans, you'd look at this and go, this is just a United, another United fan moment. As a United fan, we've had to watch other teams win the league. We've had to watch them do it well. We've had to watch United lose finals. We've had to watch them lose to other teams. That comes with the territories of football fan. I have no problems with that, as much as it hurts. But City is a whole different case altogether. We have football clubs in the Premier League already being punished for FFP PSR violations. Nobody can do what City have done. They are there. Nobody could go out right now and ignore these rules and build a team that is financially doped to the eyeballs. You can argue whether FFP, you know, is a competitive barrier or what, or that's a different argument, whether they should exist. But these are rules that everyone has to abide by. And I'm looking at this and going, the 115 charges, the fact that it's allowed to be dragged out is a total embarrassment to the league. It's something that the Premier League have to address immediately. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, well, as bad as United were, and as bad as their situation is, they played against a team that has been built upon ignoring rules. And that matters to me.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And that's why I think it's my focus in looking at it and where I'm at on it, I know you as well, is more about what we have done and what we can do to do right rather than looking at them, because it's almost irrelevant. And, you know, it's not just us, obviously. It's a situation that's prevented a few clubs from winning titles over the last few years, having to compete with this in different areas. So, you know, that is what it is. You've had FA Cups where you've had small teams that have made it there. And one of the reasons the magic of the FA Cup is gone is because none of them win it anymore. None of these teams that come from nowhere have won it in quite a while. I think teams ran up against City in a bunch of these cup finals, like over and over for years and years. And that is unfortunate to me as well. A byproduct that doesn't just affect the big clubs, but the smaller ones too, when a team can afford to put together competition at every single level so easily because of the financial implications of what they've done. So what do we have to do? Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you, one of the things you said before this game was about Ten Hag needed to go there and play pragmatic football. Mm-hmm. Something that he did at Liverpool, which you would maybe argue that he did. The 80th minute, one each. I have to be honest, I did not expect by the 80th minute, you know, to be sitting at 1-1. And I don't like doing this, but Kyle Walker on Rashford, is it any, you know, you look at what Paul Tierney gave against Hoyland at Old Trafford.
Yep.
I think United can understandably expect a free kicker. Garnacho, Ederson, you know, you can also play the ball and play the man.
Yeah.
And Ederson goes through Garnacho. And I look at someone like Pedro Neto, Liverpool penalty. God, his name's going to my head. Jota against Wolves. Goes past the keeper, goes down way after penalty. Look at Pedro Neto's penalty against United. He goes past, was it Maguire? And then goes down way after without any barely contact at all. And then going, how are they given with almost zero contact? Rashford isn't given and Garnacho isn't given.
Yeah, I fully agree when it comes to Rashford. I know that people are debating it because you could talk about it being soft, but when a player's behind you and they pull on you and there's contact with the legs, that's it for me. It's a foul. At that point in time.
Can you give it against Haaland?
I know. To me, it's not debatable. If you're behind a player and you pull him back, it's a foul. In open play, it always is. I think that what likely happened is in that moment, he doesn't know if it's a red card foul, if he calls it right then and there, right?
Yeah.
And in that moment, he doesn't know because it's close to that. I don't think it was. I don't think it would have been. But he doesn't know if it is. He may think it is. And he may be thinking with or officiating under the basis of being concerned that it would be really harsh as a red card. even if it's a foul, even if it is a foul, which, by the way, shouldn't matter at all. It's a foul, whether it's a red card or not, whether it's a last man or it's not, it shouldn't really actually impact it. There's a lot of that, though, in officiating, things that are called inside the box, or rather not called inside the box, that are always fouls outside the box. They apply some very strange standards. It's really normal. It's one of the biggest problems with officiating, for sure, is that there's no consistency in foul. It's always called based on where it is on the pitch, which is, and then they can't go back and review it, right? Because it's not a red card. They can't go back and change it after the fact.
But even since we've recorded this podcast, Bruno Fernandes gets grabbed by the throat by Felipe against Forrest.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are not a subjective decision.
No, that one is not subjective.
No one argued about the legitimacy of Casemiro being sent off for grabbing Will Hughes around the throat. It was Will Hughes. You can't do that. You can't have shown. But how do you look at what happened to Bruno Fernandes? I mean, I want Dermot Gallagher to tell me, what is the difference here? What is the difference between Bruno Fernandes being grabbed by the throat? And this is where United fans have every right to turn around and ask, that's disgraceful inconsistency. That is unacceptable inconsistency. I understand the Rashford one, where you can have variance of opinion, but what, you know, okay, subjective, that's fine. Even though I think it should be given, I'm sure I'm biased because United fan, but it should be. Purely because it was given against United, where I felt it was soft in the derby and the home game. That was a key moment in the game. At that moment, it was Norwich and City score. If that is given, the Rashford one, conceivably Kyle Walker is sent off and the second goal doesn't happen. The first goal doesn't happen. Complete change of game. Completely changes the game. Yeah. And this is one thing where I will say about Ten Hag is that these decisions haven't gone for him. I mean, you look at the Arsenal game away, Garnacho, borderline. That, if that goal's given, we're talking about a completely different outcome. Right, and we've seen this a number of times where these decisions have not gone in United's favor. Key moments, if you look at the team that took the field on Saturday, and was looking at it here, so how many of those players were actually his players? Onana, it's his players. Dalot, nope. Varane, nope. Evans, okay. Lindelof, nope. Manu's been brought in. He didn't sign him. Casemiro. So you're talking about really three players, Onana, Evans, and Casemiro, that he sent. Amrabat was obviously on the bench. I don't believe Amrabat is a signing that Ten Hag made because he singled him out for being excellent. I think it was a signing that he had to make because it was all that was available. Anthony's on the bench, so he has to take responsibility for that. But I mean, it's going to bring me to my next question, and we'll get that in a bit, about the whole Malacia mount, just the truly unbelievable situation that's going on with United's injuries. Evans and Rashford both come off carrying injuries. Allegedly, they
started with injuries, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, James, that really is beyond belief, to the point where it's not reasonable. It's not reasonable where you could say, okay, this happens in football. This is something that really does require some investigation.
It does. It absolutely does. And you're seeing some stories. I mean, I know I brought this up way back in October, I think, originally, about the concerns about this. And it's not to say that it is 100% this way, but you saw a story, I think, this morning, and I know, like, you know, that there's journalists who very much like to pick on the manager after a loss like that. Sure. So I'm not trying to necessarily jump on it, except that I've been hearing it for a long, long time. And here's the issue, right? There's a few avenues that I would say to look at this. Is that, number one, between 2019, 2023 or 24, United played more games than anyone else in all of Europe. And that is a fact. The way that they play, I think, puts quite a bit of blame on Ten Hag's shoulders for the muscle injuries, the way that they play. They're not the only ones. Liverpool pick up an enormous amount of injuries, and they have for years. They also freshen the squad every 3 years. I mean, this team, this year at Liverpool is quite different to the team that won the Premier League years ago. Way different. Totally different midfield, totally different front line. Those players are burnt out and gone. It happens. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a really high intensity way of playing. It burns players out. So if you're not replacing them, if you're not regularly, you know, flushing them in and out of the team, then you're going to have problems.
Which is what City can do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's a bit of both. The way that we play, the intensity of the training is a contributing factor. Underlying it is, of course, it's kind of almost potentially a necessity of modern football, but you need to have the squad for it and you need to adjust for it, and we don't. But either way, it's not a one piece fix. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, you know, dial back the training and that's going to solve everything. It's not. It's not a, you know, play a different brand of football and that's going to fix everything. It's not. It will reduce the load on the players, but it's not necessarily going to solve the problem. It's a multifaceted issue, and I know it's a major issue. You know, this kind of comes down to a lot of the things at United in terms of what Ineos now, who are no longer Ineos, but are United, right? So we can stop talking about the petrochemicals company and start talking about them as United, because that's what they are. The leadership at United presently is... you know, they've looked at the different areas of United in a few different ways. There's people they really like Gary O'Driscoll, the medical guy that has been brought in this season. They really like him. They think he's excellent. They think he's fantastic. They don't like the way that the medical department has been run for a long time and the way that it's been handled for a long time. That applies the same to the scouting department and these types of areas. There's a lot of people they think are really good in terms of the scouts, in terms of people who've been looking at players and all of that. But the decision-making, the way that it's been run, awful. And the same goes for analytics side of things. I know for quite a fact that they're heavily supported of United's kind of recent project where they're integrating more people from the university and all of that into getting a more data-led approach. They're a big support of that plan that started pre them coming in. But the way that it's all been managed for such a long time has been terrible and has been run poorly and effectively led to the data, the things that they have not even being used. I mean, there was a point Jose Mourinho said he didn't even like analytics and they weren't even tracking them while he was a manager, you know, because he didn't like them. Why was that allowed in the first place for him to make that kind of decision as the manager of United to go against the way that things are progressing? And so, yeah, it is the medical side of it is a disaster. In both the cases of Malasia and Lisandro Martinez, they both had surgeries with third parties, separate people, and had to have the surgeries redone. And that is a huge issue for them. Mason Mount, without getting into it too much, but there's been, there's definitely been issues in terms of how his rehab has gone with United and all of that will need to be resolved. But it is ridiculous the amount of time that they're out and that we don't know, you know, these types of things about them.
Well, Ten Hag said, I think it was around about the end of December, beginning of January, that Mason Mount was about to, you know, he's on the grass, he's about 2 weeks away. We're in March? Where is he?
Yes.
Where's Malasia? Yeah. We were told, you know, back at the same time, Malasia was about 2 weeks away, because one of the reasons why they let Reguilon go was with the confidence that he would, where is he? March,
yeah,
it's still nowhere to be found, and this is, you know, Rashford, Evans, you know, the load on these players is huge. Johnny Evans cannot be playing this much football at his age. He wasn't brought to play this much football at his age. Victor Lindelof at left back against someone like Phil Foden had a predictable outcome, and Phil Foden's an exceptional football player. In Lindelof's defense, he's not a left back. That's a specialized position. You know, you can maybe get away with playing a center back, you know, left footed center back at the right or other ways against average teams, but you would never have. I mean, I know City played Aki there for a while, but Aki is left footed and can play there. You know, Solskjaer looked at bringing Aki in when he wanted a left footed center back, but. You know, they're sitting with one of the world's, I think he's the world's most expensive defender on the bench, Vardiol.
Yep.
And United are sitting with Willie Kambwala. I mean, we're comparing these two teams based on United's history and saying that Manchester United, based on their history and their size, should be going into Manchester City and doing a lot better. But that's not commensurate with the reality where United are at right now. United are sitting there with, once they get four or five injuries, a below average Premier League squad. That's the reality. Mixed with some kids, you know, that wouldn't probably be getting into another top team every week. Exceptional talents, you know, Garnacho certainly wouldn't be starting for City every week. Garnacho's an exceptional talent. He has ups and downs, as all kids will at this age. Mainu's an exceptional talent. He has ups and downs, like all kids will at this age. That is perfectly normal. You know, but you have to be honest about where United are at as a squad. They're miles off City in terms of the squad. Even if they had a full fit squad, I still doubt that it went and done much, much better, except that. But expecting Ten Hag to be able to get these players to go out and play, you know, total football or attacking football, or going for the throat against City away, is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people are angry at it, because there's other good reasons to be upset and to question Ten Hag, but I don't really think he could have done much more than what he did against City.
No, I don't think City moves the dial much at all into respect. In some ways, it's actually a game that was almost a no-lose situation for Ten Hag in some ways with the decision makers. He wasn't going to lose the job from City, but he could have convinced more, I guess. And that's not, again, I'm not actually saying that as a critique of him. If you go into City and you pull out something incredible, it does do you benefit. Sure. It does do you good. But it's not going to move the dial the other direction at this point in time. And the thing is, you know, for me, Roy Keane said this afterwards, and I think it's a valid point. And to me, it's the bigger issue. And it has very little to do with the City game, which is about performance versus results. I mean, you and I have sat here and done this podcast now with basically one game a week for a few months now. And I know that after every one of the wins, neither of us felt particularly convinced by what was going on when we were winning some games. And part of the thing is, you know, results matter, but I think results matter when they matter. You know, like results are the be all end all when you're in a position for them to matter as a team. And obviously at the end of the day, you have to win games and you have to get there. And it's sort of a tricky situation because it's an accumulation of bad results that lead you to a situation where results no longer matter. But, you know, at the stage that United are at, it's certainly the biggest problem has been regularly the performances being under par. And Fulham being a pretty good example of that. I thought the Forest game was, we won again, squeaky, you know, with Casemiro, was a pretty bad game too in general. You know, but the thing is, there wasn't that much difference. You know, that's sort of the point. There wasn't much difference between the Forest game and the Fulham game. One we lost, one we won, you know, at the end of the game. But the performances were really poor. I thought the performance against City was probably a little better than both of those games in many ways, because they at least did something really well, which is they compactly defended well. I thought they broke well in the first half and they did some things well. And United still are at their best in that situation. And, when they defend compactly and are playing on the run, they're still at their best doing that. And I think that's the bigger, you know, problem with where things are at. So, you know, I'll let you kind of direct where we want to go with the topic here now, but okay, in terms of the manager in the future and all of that now.
If I'm Ten Hag's agent, okay, and I'm sitting with United, I'm going to remind him of something Ralph Rangnick said.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, look, you have to decide how you want to play. And then you have to sign players based on that. And you have to bring players into the football club that can play the way your manager wants to play. I don't think Ten Hag can play the way he wants to play with the squad he put out. It was hard to put out at the weekend, or the team they put against them, Fulham. And we've seen this too many times this season. I think even if you go back to the home game against City, two of the players that started that game were actually his players that he signed. So you have a mishmash of players that aren't capable of playing the way he wants to play. So does he compromise his principles and the way he plays and his strengths and to play against a Pep Guardiola team? You know, he would get criticized for that. And United just haven't done enough. I mean, in the windows, if Ten Hag's essentially had two windows in out of four, because the one in January, they didn't do anything. The January before, they sensed that they're in very close. Even in the first window, right, it was mishandled because they didn't sign three of the players that they wanted to sign until after the Brentford game. This window, what they signed, three, four players on final day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at they've had more loan signings in Ten Hag's tenure than what they've had over the last 20 years. He's working for a football club that haven't been trying to catch City ever. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Glazers have been trying to do over the last 10 years. They haven't been trying to catch City. So I would sit there and say, look, whatever you want from me, I can't give it to you with that score. Okay? If you want me to paint a certain picture, you have to give me the right artists. These players can't do what I want them to do. And hiring a guy like me is a waste of time if you're going to give me players like that.
Yep.
Football club no longer has the financial capacity to give the money to the things that they need to be able to play the way they want. So inevitably, you get a hybrid style of everything. You get no style. Every single criticism that was leveled as being leveled at Ten Hag was leveled at Mourinho, was leveled at Van Gaal, was leveled at Solskjaer, every single one for exactly the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying he shouldn't be sacked. I'm just saying if I was his agent, I would lay that out in front of United and say, you know, you're asking me to bake you a pie and you're giving me different ingredients.
Yeah.
You want me to bake you an apple pie, you have to give me apples. You can't give me oranges. Because what's going to come out of the oven will not be what I'm here to do. It's not my thing. So, and that's why I said the squad that he has, what took a field, if I'm Brailsford, then I'm watching that. Yes, you can be angry at Ten Hag, but I'm also livid at the decay of the football club that being allowed to happen that resulted in that. Because that, to me, was far more telling about what has been going on at United and the fact that they've now been handicapped over the last couple of years from properly recruiting with any type of vision because they bled the piggy bank dry. Now, that being said, the results this season have been terrible. You can't finish bottom of your Champions League with Galatasaray and FC Copenhagen. I'm sorry, you can't, right?
Yeah.
You know, United are 11 points off Aston Villa in March. Unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. And there's been lots of times this season where Ten Hag has come out and said things after games, which was a complete contrast to what he was doing last season. One of the things that I loved about him last season was his refreshing honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Say, this wasn't good enough, that wasn't good enough. And what he said yesterday irritated me. It irritated me after Fulham as well. Where he's, oh, you know, we played really well. We controlled the game. We almost got a draw. Stop that. Because, again, I'm going to ask you, is that what you think you need a team should look like? Is that what you think
playing right. well
like? Because if it does, that worries me more than anything. I would have far more respect for Ten Hag at this point if he came out and said that's nowhere near any level that I consider to be good enough. I'm not going to blame the players. We're all going to take collective responsibility as a club. But that is unacceptable for Manchester United. And I think that in football or any top job, yes, it's not always your fault when you get sacked completely, but I have a feeling that Ten Hag is already, this future has already been decided. I would be surprised at this point if he's still here at the end, by the end of the season.
Yeah, well, here's the reality of the situation. And it's, you know, it's a little, some of it is definitely unfortunate for Ten Hag in the situation he's come into. One, because just by default, new owners often get new managers in general, right? Mm-hmm. They're not the ones who hired Ten Hag, right? So he can't really go to them and say, well, you hired me to do this job and you haven't given me the tools to do it because they didn't hire him to do any job. He's just there. You know, it's the same argument, unfortunately, that John Murtaugh has to make. He's been, you know, it's kind of a funny situation because if you look at that team, who are the best players on that team? Who would you for sure keep for future years. Probably Kobbie Mainoo, Alejandro Garnacho, Rasmus Højlund. Well, John Murtaugh oversaw all of those.
Martinez would keep.
Yeah.
But these are key transformative players for Ten Hag. Yeah. Right. Yeah. If Luke Shaw is going to be injured all season, you have to have a quality left back. Yeah. Right. I'm sorry. I mean, if you look at Luke Shaw's injury record at United, go back to when he first came.
Yep.
And Van Gaal criticized him for not being fit.
Yep.
He was also criticized by the English team, English national team, for not being fit. There's been some question marks about that, you know, about Luke in his early part of his career. To be fair, he did. You know, his wife got rid of a bunch of people, hangers on around him. He refocused, and he had this exceptionally good career. But if you look at how many games he misses a season, it's unacceptable to be going into a season with an injured left back in Ty Malasia.
Yep.
And yep. And then getting rid of Alvaro Fernandez. Maybe Alvaro Fernandez is not good enough. That's fine. And then trying to sign Reguilón on the last day of the season. Playing Amrabat left back, right back. Unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And Wan-Bissaka, you know, that, I don't know what's going on there, right? So now, I mean, I look at the United team. If that was a Bournemouth team that took the field at the weekend, I really wouldn't be that surprised if looked a lot like United's team. Yeah. With maybe one or two players, with the exception of maybe Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. I'd say that, mate. That's what I would expect from a team of that level, you know?
Yeah.
So they've been running on fumes for ages. And if you even go back to his first season, James, when United, you know, they signed Christian Eriksen on a free. They signed Ty Malasia for 12 million. They signed Lisandro Martinez for 55. And then they panicked, right? Because they hadn't signed De Jong. And then they panicked. They got Casemiro and Anthony because they needed another forward. What United did then was a reflection of their incompetence. Not because Ten Hag always spent 400 million. No, Manchester United spent 400 million, right? Not Ten Hag. That's the incompetence tax that you've been paying. So they make a mess of the first window. Second window, he needs a striker, just like Ranić needed. They don't get him. You know, they could have had Luis Diaz the year before, Vlahovic the year before. They didn't either. And then they go out and sign a striker that never scored a Premier League goal, and Marcel Sabitzer, a decent midfielder who also gets injured. January, he needed a striker. For the same reason he needed one in the summer outside of Holland, and they don't get one, they can't. And you're going like, this is very difficult for any manager in that situation to succeed, because the preparation and the planning is ridiculous. I mean, they're playing Amari Forson, who's out of contract in the summer, and it is infuriating when you think about why that would happen. The question is, without the right people in place, can they actually sack Ten Hag? I'm sure Brailsford could make that decision right now, whether Ashford and Barada is there by the summer or not.
Yeah, well, they can. And I believe, you know, the way that I look at it is the same thing, you know, still at the same time, you know, as everybody else. I mean, you know, my point on John Murtaugh is, you know, he's operating under the same constraints that Erik ten Hag is when it comes to the summer, the exact same. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but Sir Alex didn't say back the director of football. So people have a little bit less loyalty to people in different positions at different parts of the club. John Murtaugh's done really good work with certain young players, bringing them in prior to the whole Brexit thing and being responsible for some of that as well. There's positives and negatives with everybody, but every single person at that club has been working with one hand tied behind their back at best under the Glazer ownership, at absolute best, every single person, except perhaps you could say Richard Arnold, who is, you know, probably a bit happy to do so because that was the job he was given. But regardless of that, the situation, you know, essentially remains that, you know, when Ineos came in and decided, we're going to put in our own people in all these positions either way. people we want to hire under the consideration that we think that they're the best in class and that they're going to do things the way we want to do them. And that position goes from top to next, to next, to next, and as is the remit of any new ownership group and what they do in practically any business when someone comes and takes over, no matter what industry they come in and they instill their own people in management positions. It happens every single time without fail. Very rare for people to remain. There likely will be more significant departures outside of the manager come summer and beyond that at different points in time. Some of them are not urgent. Some of them are. You know, like Richard Arnold, that one was viewed as one they wanted out immediately when Ineos were coming in. And others, not such a big deal. You know, they've worked with and in tandem with John Murtaugh on data, things like that. He may stay in that job. You know, there's people like Darren Fletcher, who's obviously, you know, very much a well-liked and well-respected individual, former player of the club. His kids have moved over from the City Academy. What's his future? Because it looks to me like, you know, Jason Wilcox is going to come take his job shortly based on what's out there. Is he going to stay in that role or go to a different one? And they will be looking at the manager. And as I understand, and I think what I said last week was that, you know, they're likely going to be making that decision soon. And as far as I gather it today and from the things that I've heard, I do think it's very likely that that decision, if not already made, is pretty much on the cusp of being made as to whether he will be the manager next season and what they intend to do. And it's really going to be on the basis of there's so many reasons why Ten Hag isn't at fault for what's wrong that are totally valid, totally 100% valid. But the question, of course, is whether there were enough arguments in his favor in comparison to what they might have wanted or what they might want moving forward, which might be just entirely different to what Ten Hag wants anyway. I'm not saying that he would want to quit the job, but they may have a totally difference of opinion. I've said this before in terms of what the role means, what it entails, and what the job, you know, has. There was a good report the other day that came out from somebody who has had some decent stuff on Ineos. This is something I've been speaking on for quite a while, that, you know, they really want to relegate the manager to a coaching position and have very little involvement in transfers. And one can agree or disagree as to whether that's a good idea, bad idea, whether it works, whether it doesn't. But I'm not sure that that is something that is agreeable to everybody. I'm not sure that – I'm sure there are managers who won't take the job on that basis, you know. I don't think someone like Zinedine Zidane is going to come take the Manchester United job in that kind of role. I don't think that's going to happen. There are plenty of managers that won't, and there are some that will be happy to. So there's certainly probably a bit of a – I think that it would – I wouldn't be surprised if United fans get a bit of a reality check, despite some of the wording and the things that have been said as to how Ineos view how long this is going to take and how far behind United are. Because it is a long way off. And I guarantee you, they do not think that United are ready to compete next season with one good summer and a different coach if they make a change. They don't. They don't think we're anywhere close to that.
These are good points, because here's what I think. First of all, if I'm Ten Hag and I have a strong sense that I'm getting sacked, I resign. And that may cost you millions, right? But it will keep your reputation, and it would shift the blame on Team United. If I was Ten Hag, I'd say, look, I can't work in this environment. I can't do what you're asking me to do with these players. You know, I need to go in a different direction. And if he gets sacked, he'll take most of the blame. Now, people talking about Graham Potter and De Zerbi and stuff. First of all, for United to have the departments behind the scenes to fully function to support a manager like Potter and De Zerbi, it's going to take a while. The system that they're going to have behind you as a manager, you know, it's not going to be fully functional and work and functional to optimal levels for a while. There's, you know, idiosyncrasies you have to work out. You have to work out how to integrate these departments and these people and where they all support each other. That's going to take a while. And it won't all be right off the bat. I don't think United should be going for someone like Potter and De Zerbi for a couple of reasons. One, it's a whole different job. I kind of sort of compare this with a high school teacher and a college professor. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different job getting young people at a certain age to realize potential and grow into, you know, high level people. And then it's a whole different job to refine those people into experts and say, okay, now we're going to jump to the next level. Yep. Because the people that can go to the top, very, very top, it becomes fewer and fewer. People who can get from this level to this level is a lot easier. And the people that are going from this level to this level are not under anywhere near the same pressure as the people from this level to this level. And it's all about the environment and the expectation, the focus and all that. You can lose 5, 6, 7 games at Brighton and get no criticism. If Evan Ferguson was at United right now, he would be getting slaughtered, right? Mm-hmm. Because he wouldn't be allowed to have the slumps, the developmental issues that are perfectly normal with young kids this age. And so it's a different ask. The ask to Zerbi and Graham Potter to say, do a good job with Brighton. Get them into 7th, develop some young players, sell them on a massive profit, rinse and repeat. And this is something Zlatan Ibrahimovic said, of course, with Ajax. And this is where maybe I have some concerns with Ten Hag. Because it's one thing to ask young players at Ajax who will listen to you and who will behave a certain way and follow your instruction and because you're winning every week, versus sitting down with, you know, to use this metaphor, there's high-end executives and say, do what I tell you. We're not high school kids. Okay? Yeah. So I think that the problem with the Potter and De Zerbi is once you hit a bad patch, it's really easy for people to lose confidence in them because they don't have the resume that gets them through a bad patch. And you need that confidence to remain calm and say, this is a really good manager because the track record proves it. If they hit a bad patch, players will lose confidence in them. Fans will lose confidence in them. And the people that hire them are like, I'm not sure. You know, it's really easy to lose faith. One of the dangers for Ten Hag right now is the people that are running the club didn't hire him.
Yeah.
More in exactly the same position. People that run the club, people didn't hire him. So it's easy for Woodward to sack Moyes because it wasn't his choice and he bears no responsibility for David Moyes' failure. And that is exactly the case with Ten Hag. And this is why, also, of course, Woodward would have had his own vision if he wanted to hire.
Yep.
The probability that that was David Moyes is almost zero. That belongs to a previous regime. And even this is where I think Ten Hag was in trouble from day one, is that the probability that he was Omar Barada's choice would be Omar Barada's choice is almost zero. So all these things working against them, I just don't seem surviving. But one of the things that we said last week is that next season starts in March.
Yep.
If United have decided that Ten Hag is going to be moved on, they may be moving on right now.
Yeah, I know. That is the challenge of it. I think that you run into a couple different issues here with this situation, which is number one, theoretically, you're not eliminated from Champions League and you're still in the FA Cup tournament at the moment. Now, I know that Arsenal, obviously, they moved on from Unai Emery and brought in Arteta mid the FA Cup, right? Or was it the League Cup? FA Cup, right? And he won the FA Cup. Played a couple games at the end of the year, won the FA Cup. But they weren't really in Champions League positions or
competing. By the way, in the second season, they lost 5-0 at the Emirates.
I think that it is a challenge because, one, if the manager that you do want is in a job, you probably don't want to go through the interim period either way, which is why I don't think that he will be let go before the end of the season, no matter what, in a lot of ways. It gets really expensive changing managers, hiring. I mean, Ralf Rangnick cost the club multiple tens of millions between him and staff and everything that went into that for absolutely nothing. We would have been better off keeping Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to the end of the season.
That was Murder's choice, by the way.
What's that?
That was Murder's choice to bring in.
Yeah, like- I know. It was a huge mistake in judgment, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people were excited about that too, and it did not work out the way
you bring him as a sporting director, you don't bring him as
So, you know, I think it's a challenge. You know, if it's Graham Potter, yeah, you could potentially bring him in before the end of the season. But there's problems with that too, frankly. I'm not saying that that's the person, but there's problems with that too. If you're in the middle of a failing season, you don't want to bring in a manager and have them tainted with that season either. You don't want to have that have them tainted with that brush. You don't want that to be a part of it. Like, oh, they came in with 10 games less and lost 5 games, and now you're starting on a pretty negative note with that manager. That's a bad situation for anyone to be in. So as far as I've heard, I don't think that he'll be removed under almost any circumstances before the end of the season. But could you have a situation like Tuchel at Bayern where it's been said that he will depart, or Xavi at Barcelona where it's been said that he'll depart, or Jurgen Klopp where it's been said that he'll depart for different reasons, obviously? I don't think so. I mean, honestly, it's just the way United do things. I don't think you'll get anything specific until the end of the season in terms of any sort of official statement, any sort of communication or anything like that. I don't know if that's the right decision. You know, I don't know. I can see the logic either way. If they start looking at and talking to managers in March or by the end of this month, it's going to get out there. It's going to be out there. People are going to talk about it. Not that they aren't already talking about it. And so I don't know. Like, I'm not actually sure what the point is in some ways. It's one of those funny things about football that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I get it why you don't want to be a manager or someone in the job. But at the same time, they're under contract while they're in the job. They have a responsibility to do their best. Of course, how can they?
Doesn't, you know, I know. Once, you know, contracts are pieces of paper. You know, how a human being responds to knowing they're not going to be in a job. I mean, what would be the commitment for Ten Hag to invest in any future young player? I mean, it just to
I
me,
know. In that situation,
you're better off just going with an interim guy to the end of the season and just saying, you know what, that's because you, that to me is, I mean, it's just impossible to ask a human being to give you 100% when they know they're, I mean, it's one thing if a manager decides to leave, like he did at Ajax, you know, he might take the job at United in April.
Yep.
That's different, right? Yep. Because that's his own choice. But it's a bit like, you know, staying in a marriage while your wife's dating someone else, you know, and you're just waiting until she meets someone until you can get kicked out. I mean, it's like, what am I doing here? Like, I mean, you just can't remain committed.
I know.
Someone's not committed to you. It's just, I mean, there's a pride issue here. There's, you know,
Ten Hag. Look, breakups are messy. That's part of the problem here. It's hard to find. it's hard to find a clean way to do this, you know.
Well, it goes a little bit back to the Ashworth thing, right? Ten Hag inevitably would be also talking to other clubs during that tenure. Do United really want Ten Hag talking to other clubs while he's still Manchester United manager? I don't think so. No, because there's obviously proprietary information they wouldn't want him passing on to other people. Yeah. Let's say he's playing against...
But I'm sure his manager, I mean, his agent is talking to other clubs.
Well, sure, but let's say he's, you know, Villa. Last game of the season, or so, whatever, something like this, where you need to have to win to get in the Champions League, and he's going to this club at the end of the season. I mean, to me, it's just a farcical situation. You just cannot have this.
I know.
But I, you know, Bayern, they drew what, the weekend with Freiburg and had 10 points off.
It's gone awful since it's
make
it's
the been decision
awful.
Or don't.
Yeah. I know.
Manager, go. I understand the financial thing, but to me, yeah, that's
look. I agree with you. To me, it's like it's better for everybody, but like we kind of talked about with Jim Ratcliffe's comments last week, he didn't back him, you know. No. Like it would have been easy to throw the backing behind the manager in the same way that you would hope that they would do it either direction, you know what I mean? Like, I would like to see it either way. Ten Hag will be the manager next year, or Ten Hag won't be. I'd like them to say it. I think it would be better for everybody,
you know,
involved. Yeah,
you know what I heard when I heard Ratcliffe say that? Yeah. Yes, we're going to sack him, but it's not his fault.
Yeah, well, exactly. That was the exact takeaway, I think that's the point I've tried to make. People is, I know it's a sacking from a technical standpoint. I know it's literally a sacking, right? But it's one of those few moments where, you know, someone says it's not you, it's me, and that's actually true. And and there's something in it. Like I said, he's interviewing for the job. And the way that I would see it is, it's more, he's not the best candidate we've interviewed. we have other candidates we prefer. You know, we'll give you a call if we change our mind in the future. And it's complicated. I mean, this is, there's no way to cut it. This is a complicated situation. That's why you would have wished, and this is down to the Glazers and other factors, that this was all actually resolved by the end of last season, like it was supposed to be, yeah, right, on the ownership front, and that they were able to go in before the season starts to make these kind of plans, to do the things they needed to do, to actually, at that point in time, they would not have sacked Ten Hag under any circumstances. He would have stayed. Mm-hmm. They would have done things a different way, and you would have had a cleaner situation here. There's no clean. I mean, you have a situation, God, where Dan Ashworth has now left Newcastle. He's still not signed a contract with United, right? He's now just literally working in his garden because he can't do anything else, right? you have this really odd situation, you know. At least Omar Barada is joining United. It's confirmed. At least we know that. But there's nothing else confirmed at this point in time. And that's not actually a slight on Ineos. That's just how messy it is trying to do all of this in the middle of a season, you know, but they couldn't wait till summer to do it. And that's affecting everything down the board. So it's messy, and it's really hard to say there's a singular best clean way to do all of this that's going to make the most sense. But obviously, you know, I don't think these are people. These are serious people, and they are business people at the end of the day. Corporate decisions, you know, and the way that these things happen at some point in time, you know, I don't think they're going to pitter patter around it like it might have happened under the Glazers. I think they will pass along a decision, whether it's official or formal or to Ten Hag himself. I think that decision will be passed down either way in the coming weeks or so. And then maybe they do look to an interim if they decide to make a change, but, it's messy. It's real unfortunate. The whole thing, the way that it has all played out, is messy. And yeah, I still see it as totally a consequence of the mismanagement from above for such a long time, including the whole ownership takeover process, which took way too long, you know, to the point again, where Sir Jim Ratcliffe was saying a week before Christmas, he's going to withdraw his offer if they don't finally vote on this damn thing and pass it through. I mean, that's how ridiculous it all is in terms of the delays. It's hard to illustrate just how damaging at so many levels the way that things have happened have been from just the decision-making process. But I do agree with you on Potter and De Zerbi. I mean, I have genuine concerns on a managers like that. I look at, you know, some of the people that have come in. You know, Arsenal had Arteta, who didn't have a job before, but obviously worked with Pep. And it took him quite a while to turn things around. And I think they were quite lucky too that it was during COVID and that the stadium was empty while they were getting smacked around in eighth place. And they got a lot of time to turn that around when they were pretty poor. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a tricky situation. I think that if you bring in another manager, they should be somebody who has accomplished something.
James, the thing
successfully.
When United were going to hire Ten Hag, a lot of people want the Pochettino. I didn't want him for the same reason. They don't want De Zerbi and they don't want Graham Potter, because you have to have a track record of success. Pochettino is getting eaten alive now at Chelsea. Chelsea fans want him out, and they're going to go through the same cycle United have gone through until they figure this out, that this is not – you have to make sure that a football manager has proper structure behind them to succeed. And Chelsea don't have that. And so I could only see, you know, they did exactly the same thing to Graham Potter. It'd be the same thing. And I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. And that's the thing. There's no obvious answer to me about who United should go for. But I know who they shouldn't go for. And I don't believe any one of them is Graham Potter now. Yeah. I don't believe any of them are Manchester United managers. I think that they need to go for a top class manager. And apologies about that phone call. I told my girlfriend not to call me at work. I'll have to sort that out for next week's podcast. But we shall leave it there, mate. Before we go, quick prediction for Everton.
I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it'll be probably 2-2. They're a good team right now. They have a few players I'm very strongly keeping an eye on. In Jared Braithwaite, obviously, we've spoken about a few times in the past, as well as Amadou Onana. Despite, you know, getting deducted the points and some of that still in flux and all that as well, to where they're probably not going to get relegated now, which I think is a good thing, because it would be a real shame if that happened to them. I think they're a pretty good team. I think they're actually playing quite well. Very, very Sean Dyche ball, but they're playing well. And I think that's it's going to be a tricky game. The last time we played them was obviously the Garnacho stunner, the overhead kick, the one that will not be repeated. But outside of that, I think we got quite a bit lucky.
The way we won season, wasn't it? The 3-0?
Yeah. But we were, it wasn't even the best. I mean, it's funny because it was a 3-0. But it wasn't a 3-0 game, but it was a 3-0 result. I'm a little we have to be better than that, I think, because I don't think we're going to get that kind of magic again to win it. So we have to be better than that. And I hope we are. We could be 9 off fifth place, which might get Tottenham have a game in hand. So we could be 9 off of fifth place if they win their game that they have at the next at weekend. And fifth will likely get, I think it's like a 78% probability that fifth gets Champions League this year. I think another win another loss like Everton, I think probably does it. I think there's a few games we can afford to lose, but that's not one of them.
I don't even see how United have the consistency to catch, because the other teams ahead of
even 9 points is too much.
But the other teams ahead of you can lose and they'll give you the opportunity to catch them, but you have to be almost perfect. And it's hard for me to see where that comes from, because United are such an easily beatable team. I mean, even when they were winning these games, the amount of shots they were conceding in games, there was an inevitability about the fact that they will lose against a good team, because they will get punished for being that open against teams that can finish. And inevitably they were. All right, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thanks to all of you for downloading the podcast. As always, I hope you're all doing well. I know it's been a rough weekend. I have to say, I probably felt worse last weekend, if I'm honest, after the Fulham game, because that was one that, had United have beat Fulham and lost this game, I probably would have been okay. But the Fulham game, on top of that, to lose the last, is where I'm like...
The Fulham game was a bit of a disaster.
I'm feeling for Ten Hag a bit, but this is where, if Ten Hag was managing another top European club and get sacked for this, I go, well, yeah, what do you expect? Chaos or not behind the scenes?
It's Fulham.
Well, I mean, you can't finish bottom. I mean, finishing bottom of the Champions League group would have been enough to get you sacked pretty much anywhere.
Yep.
But all right, we'll leave it there. Thanks, man. Thanks to all of you, like I said, for downloading and following the podcast. Much appreciated. And we'll be back next week. Take it easy, man. Take it.